Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. I am Mo, and this is the King of the Casters over here, Mr. Brett Podcast. But who cares? Who cares? Because on the phone is a man that we couldn't be more excited to talk to. His name is Robert Mason, and he's here to tell us about his latest project, The End Machine. Hello, Robert.
Hello, how are you today?
Well, we're totally awesome.
We're talking to Robert Mason, you know.
There you go.
You know, we've been listening to you for years.
Me too, let's get rolling.
Yeah, we've been listening to you for a long time. You got, you played a lot of our favorite songs and played with some of our favorite musicians over the years. And you know, we've always appreciated your work, and this is a good time for us.
Well, it's a great time for me as well.
All right, well, we're here to talk about The End Machine, so why don't we start out with the new album that's coming out March 22nd. I mean, that's you know, Jeff Pilson, Mick Brown, and George Lynch, of course, joining you. I mean, that's pretty damned awesome.
Well, you know, we're all friends, known each other a long time, and the math of it is pretty easy to do. You know, three guys from Lynch Mob, three guys from Dokken, depending on how you look at it, and then you throw them all together and see what happens. We're really happy with the result.
Yeah, you know, I see a lot of people saying things like, here's Dokken without Dokken, and you know, or Dokken, you know, spin-off, and I think that's completely unfair. That pisses me off. You be honest. Does that piss you off?
You can't help make the comparison, and that's why we're doing Pret. I would not have been involved if it was simply going to be Dokken minus Don. You know, I mean, I'll say it just like it is. The three guys from that band with me stapled onto the front of it. If it was going to sound exactly like the next record that you would expect from that band, I would have not been involved. And we're friends. We share common DNA in, you know, our influences and the things that we like. And yes, there will be things that are reminiscent of Lynch Mob and Dokken on these records for fans, but it was purpose built to be its own thing. And I think people are realizing that now with two of the songs that have seen the light of day, you know, out on the YouTubes and the radios and stuff like that. So hopefully that'll be apparent and fans will embrace it. You never know what they're going to dig, but I think just George and Jeff throwing Doc and B-sides at me and me writing to them would have been a cheap way out. So that's not what we did.
Yeah, that totally would have, and I think the fans would have noticed too. The question that I have for you then is, how hard is it to try to consciously write songs that I guess are different and try to make things their own beast in this case?
Well, thankfully, we've all got influences all over the map, and you know, George is going to play the way George is going to play. To a certain degree, you're going to know it's him. He's got a signature to the way he plays. And by the same token, you know, your voice is your voice. I can't unsound like me. But the Warrant thing has a certain vibe. The Lynch Mob thing has a certain vibe. I tried to, throughout the years when I put down song ideas and write, for whatever reason, I'm always writing. And each song has categories. I mean, I fly out to Nashville and write with a bunch of, like, big-name country and small-name country and R&B people from pop all the way to traditional country. I do that a few times a year. So clearly that's not going to sound like a Warrant or Lynch Mob record. So I'm a musician, and I love music. I have different influences. We picked and chose ideas for the start of the End Machine record that sort of fit what we thought it should be, and anything that was too derivative, we either changed or stayed away from, or, you know, kind of melded into something that became its own. I think the record has a good amount of diversity. Hopefully fans will embrace that, but it has a common thread. Like I said, the DNA is there. You can tell us four guys, but we go out and stretch our legs a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I got to say that just the other day, I found myself singing "Life is Love is Music" as I was puttering around the kitchen. So there you go. You've got something in my head.
Well, see, you never know where those things are going to come from. And firstly, I appreciate that. That was that was an interesting tattoo on a friend of mine who was German, and she passed away very, very sadly and tragically a couple of years ago. And I always loved the "life is love is music is life is love is music" is in a tattoo on, you know, as a circular tattoo. And I've been waiting to put that to music, and I just had it in my head. I wrote a bunch of lyrics, heard the Jeff and George demo of that particular song, and I was like, oh, I think I can somehow shoehorn these lyrics into this song, and that's exactly how that happened.
Is that kind of the writing process on this album? Do they send you the music after they've done it? Is there a lot of, is it, where you weren't in the same studio, I'm guessing, then, or you were, or what? How did it work?
We recorded everything at Jeff's studio. Thankfully, when your bass player is your producer and you all like each other and get along, it works great. But we all have, we're all in different bands. We're running around. We did this on days off in between our regular schedules, which is why it took a year and is also, the way you can do it these days. I got very early demo versions of unarranged, basic arrangements of the music that I really wanted Jeff and George to go nuts writing too many parts. You know what I mean? Just like, if you heard the first demo versions and then heard the finished songs, sometimes they sound vastly different. The good thing is I liked a lot of what Jeff and George put together. Sometimes I got them before they even had real drums, before Mick was even on them. And I sift through all my lyrics or whatever I'll use for inspiration. If I've got little starters here and there, if I come up with something from scratch. And then I would fly to California. I would fly to Jeff's studio, and we would make a pot of coffee in the morning and just go crazy. I would say, okay, this is the one I want to work on. And they all had silly working titles because George loves to put like stupid or witty or what he thinks is a funny joke working titles for all these songs. So I'd say, I want to listen to Out in the Cold or Last in the Attic or, whatever, Superstroke or whatever. And then I would say, these are my lyric ideas, these are my melody ideas, let's cut and paste this thing up. This part happens too much, this part should be the chorus, but it should be over here, not over here. And Jeff and I would get into Pro Tools on the computers and then digitally cut and paste these songs together to fit my lyrics and my melody ideas. And by the end of every finished day, we did one song a day, so I was in Jeff's studio 11 times. And from that first pot of coffee through whatever, 7, 8, 9 o'clock that night, we'd have one completed song arrangement, lyrics, everything sung, background vocals. And then if George had to do little stinger guitar parts around what I did for melodies and lyrics, he would come in afterwards to do that. And that's basically the process.
How many cups of coffee was it by the end of the day then?
But it was probably an amount I would not like to divulge, just in case my cardiologist is listening to any of these interviews.
Yeah, we wouldn't want you to just keel over from a coffee overdose.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff and I have a lot of common bonds, one of which is extremely strong coffee. So
that's awesome. How does it change your job as a singer then when you have Jeff and Mick singing background and you know that they can handle vocal duties?
Oh, it's a blessing. It's a godsend. Honestly, some of my favorite bands have been like Humble Pie and Grand Funk Railroad, where you have multiple instrumentalists, multiple singers, and they're all talents in their own right. The fact that I could get in there and work with Jeff directly and then have Mick come in and sing, because Mick, we built background parts. I had them all in my head as the precursor to having everybody sing. But I don't want this to sound like it's all me vocally. I really don't. The fact that Jeff has a specific tone to his voice and has a great background voice that blends in, just happened to blend in really well with what I was doing. And then we would have that, third part. We have three-part harmony, a lot of parts of these songs, where that part was built for Mick Brown. And it really was. Like, oh, dude, here's the Mick part, And I would sing a guide track, and then we'd have Mick come in, and it sounds great. It it's really a good feeling to know that, like you said, we can pull these songs off live. So, did I even answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you're speaking of live, I mean, you guys have three shots you're playing in April, I think, without Mick, I guess, but you have three shots.
My good buddy Will Hunt, if you know who Will is, he's a monster drummer. He actually sings as well, so he'll be doing those background parts. And Mick was unavailable to do them, and we really, you know, he was, then he wasn't, and we already have the shows kind of placeholders with, you know, at venues. Frontiers truly wanted us to make this a band that would play some live shows, not just be a project that would never see the light of day for live audiences. So we figured we'd do these three really quickly, and if more surface, they will. I'd love to take this to Japan. I'd take it overseas if it worked out. But we're all in other bands, so it's a little bit of a calendar time management, you know, miracle that we can even do these.
So, well, then, that's an interesting question to me, then. How much time does, say, Warrant take up for you?
Well, we've been doing, on the average, somewhere in the 50-ish to 60 shows a year, so it's a whole bunch. And the thing is, we book throughout the year, so it's a little difficult for me to say, hey, guys, I want to take this month off, and I'm just going to, you know, even if we have work come in, I'm not going to take it because I'm going to do these gigs with my other band. That's not really cool to do. It's nothing I would ever want to do. So when this weekend came up, in fact, this week, this early April week that we're going to do these three End Machine shows came up, and it was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday we booked them, Hollywood, and then Vegas, and then Tucson. Well, the agent for Warrant called up and said, don't hate me, but there's the Warrant show on Saturday the 6th, and we kind of have to do it. It's the last show for the Veterans Coliseum up by Green Bay, and Brett Michaels and you guys, I think Lita Ford is on or something, so it's for Saturday, April 6th. So I got the End Machine show moved to the 7th, so I'm going to play Hollywood and Vegas, and then first thing Saturday morning, I'm flying to Green Bay doing a show with Warrant. First thing Sunday morning on the 7th of April, I'm flying down to Tucson and doing the last End Machine show. So,
don't forget the lyrics.
That's how complicated it can get.
And you know what? And right now I'm checking my own schedule to see if I can make Green Bay for April 6th, because that sounds incredible. But, that is a thing. You know... How do you remember the lyrics when you're doing something like that? You're switching in between the shows, the different bands.
How do I remember lyrics? I don't know. I have a little tequila. I warm up. I have a little tequila. I drink a lot of water, and I just go up. I take a deep breath, and the right words come out.
Excellent.
That's one system.
I don't have stage timers yet. I don't know. We don't put lyrics on the floor. I don't have a monitor. Not yet. So we'll see what happens. I know a lot of bands do that. And hey, man, the human brain is a crazy thing. I probably have lyrics, like that 1,000-song lyric thing up there in my noggin somewhere. I don't know why I keep it, but it just keeps working. So if it stops working, you'll know.
No, that's awesome. Actually, you know, I can't remember anything. So it's very impressive you can do that. Now, I just think I've solved your problem here. The End Machine opens for Warrant, and then you just play all night. What do you think?
Is the money good? Because it sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. So how much energy, then, does it expend for you to do, like, not only one show, but, like, can you imagine two shows? I mean...
Here at M3, if anybody remembers, I did a few Warrant shows obviously we do all of our Warrant shows, but I was doing a few select Lynch Mob shows because George and I had a talk. He needed a singer for a show for the Rock Cruise last year, and Warrant was playing a show in Florida the day before, so with very short notice he said, can you come do the Monsters of Rock Cruise? And I talked to Larry Moran, who's the guy who schedules the whole thing, and he and I had a chat, and, you know, it worked out for me. I played a warrant show in Florida. The next day I got on the ship because we had a week off and did the Lynch Mob thing. And then I did a few subsequent Lynch Mob shows throughout last summer when it worked out. And it's, you know, it's when it works out. That was kind of the thing where George and I started playing a lot together, and it made the End Machine idea work. I loved what I do. I love what I do. I have the greatest job in the world for me. It's what I'm qualified to do. So thankfully, you know, people still want to pay for tickets and, you know, support live music. That's how long the warrant guys will be doing what we do.
That makes you qualified to do one more thing than me. So that's pretty good.
It's exhausting in a fun, good way. Yeah. I don't abuse myself. I work out a ton. You know, I thankfully have a little bit of resistance to influenza and a strong immune system and a decent set of vocal cords still. So I'll just keep pushing it.
So George Lynch, you know, to this day is the words guitar god are thrown around too much, but it's no exaggeration with him. And to this day, do you kind of sometimes sit there and see the things he does and just kind of marvel at it?
I usually think, why is this solo long? Is it long? Is it longer tonight than it was last night? Why is it so long today? No. I love watching the guy go play the stuff that's on the records. He's certainly a uniquely and immensely talented human being in what he does. You know, do I still think he's a knucklehead sometimes? Of course, but he probably thinks the same thing about me. Anybody knows a little bit about me knows that my first big barbecue was in the band Lynch Mob. That was my first. I had a record deal back in New York with a band that a record never came out before that. So I moved out to Arizona, joined Lynch Mob, and immediately got thrown into, here, we're going to write a record, put it out, go out, you know, tour around everywhere. So I've known the guy since I was 25, 26. And there's a comforting feeling, but then there's also a very discomfort feeling when you're in playing a live Lynch Mob show where you kind of don't know where it's going to go for a minute or two there. And that's part of the charm and magic of that guy, that he'll just switch gears and take you in a place where, you know, wear a helmet, wear a cup. Lynch Mob could be dangerous business. It could get rough out there, kids.
That's
but
funny.
Because
yeah, very cool. George is just such. I think he's almost reached mythic proportions just in the way that people talk about him. So it is nice to get some, you know, inside scoop from a guy who works with him.
He's one of those guys, and I have a lot of people that I know that are immensely talented and guitar players among them. I mean, Luke Adler and I are friends, and that guy's just a weapon on guitar. Doug Aldrich is amazing, and I just talked to him. It's funny, I just saw him at NAMM, and we're standing there at a jam backstage going, why don't we hang out more? Why don't we write songs together ever? This is stupid. We're friends forever, and we need to do this. So every time I run into people like that, like Reb Beach and other guys that are just those players, you know? Vi is amazing. I saw him at that jam, too. It was just so much fun. But, yeah, George is one of those cats, man. He's a unique breed of cat, too. He's a different kind of guy. It's part of what makes him great.
So when you're joining a band like Warrant, then seeing if the personalities are going to fit ahead of time, or is it just, hey, I love these songs, love Janie's songs and the stuff they did over the years, and I just want to get in there and sing them, or is it let's feel it out first? How much kind of I don't know, what was the process like?
Well, with the Warrant guys, Janie and I were really good friends. We made fast friends when I was recording that Lynch Mob record in 91. So when Dog Eat Dog came out in 92 and our record came out, it was our friendship that led to Lynch Mob doing direct support for Warrant in arenas around the whole country in 92. So I was around those guys. I knew them. Lane and I were great friends and drinking buddies and hanging out, all the things. So I got to meet the Warrant guys, not just meet them, but spend a bunch of time on the road. And I've told the story a bunch of times. When I was at Rocklahoma in 08, playing a gig, and then found out that, you know, Lane was having a couple of problems and the band was out and they were headlining Rocklahoma that night. So Joey Allen and I ran into each other and he kind of told me what was going on. And, you know, they were concerned for Janie, and he had been in and out of rehab a few times that last year. And it was a little rough. And honestly, I'm pulling no punches here. And I knew the whole story, but, you know, seeing those four out of five guys that were really wanting to fire on all five cylinders, and they had one guy that just couldn't be out on the road and do it the same way, you know, I felt for him. So when they had made the decision to, you know, keep Janie home, but they had those bunch of shows booked, they asked me to come out and do them. And I remember racing out to California and playing with them for a minute in like this grungy little rehearsal place, because we all had a common day off. And once you run through those songs, and I was a fan first, you know, and I remember watching, we'd finish Lynch Mob shows, and I would finish dinner, get in a shower after Lynch Mob, and race up to watch Warrant from stage right or stage left. So, you know, I don't want to put my own stamp on those songs. I want fans that remember those melodies to hear them as close as possible without me doing an imitation, which is not something I do. But those songs are great, and I was a fan, like I said, and I still am. So I'm just the fan that gets to sing those songs, and I watch all the other fans at Warrant shows get off on it the way I do, and we all join in. And the thing about the Warrant fans are they sing along, they get into it. It's a lighthearted, even though the songs are great, some of them are very deep lyrically, it's still a fist in the air, loud, like American rock party, you know? It really is. And to be embraced by those fans after 10 years now, and the band, you know, now it fires on all five cylinders, and we go do 50, 60 shows a year, every year. So,
you know, it's a...
But those guys are great players, too. You know, those guys are all great players and underrated players. I mean, my two guitar players and Dixon up front with me and then Steven on the drums, I mean, it really is a fun band to play with and, you know, to front and be in front of and kind of lead the charge. And that's kind of the way I do everything anyway. I mean, I'm leaning over the front of the edge of the stage. I think I've hit everybody in the band with a mic stand at least once. You know, stuff like that. So it's a good fun.
You know, as a huge Warren fan, I want to let you know that we appreciate you keeping those songs alive and that you go out there and you give us the chance to go back and experience the songs again, remember Janie, and also have a new experience at the same time. It's the type of thing that's important to us, the those of us who grew up, you know, listening to that, and it's really is appreciated.
But it's my immense pleasure to do that. I mean, that can come off as sounding cheesy, but I really do mean it. I know I say it a lot, but I do have the best job in the world for me. Speaking of which, I got to keep myself on time. I have to call right now. I need to go. Dude, these are, you know what's funny? Management set these up, and it's like seven of them in a row, and they put them all on Central Time, like I said, and I was like, shoot, I think I'm an hour late. Damn it, I need to go. So I've been like racing through these today.
All right. Well,
we would sit here an hour waiting to talk to you.
Absolutely. And I know that we could talk a lot longer. I'm just going to give you a quick chance to plug everything for the album, for yourself. Let fans know where they can find the album.
It's going to be out on, March 22nd at Frontiers Records. It's simply called The End Machine. Find it, borrow it, record it, steal it, whatever you have to do. Buy two copies that way. There's going to be the Gatefold album is coming out as a double album, which is kind of cool. They have special edition versions of those. The End Machine is on every... I mean, if you plug The End Machine into any search engine, it's on Facebook. It's everywhere. We have... I've got my own Robert Mason Box Instagram. Go see a Warrant show. Go see an End Machine show. Go support live music.
I tell you, we would love to see an End Machine show. That no doubt about it. Well, hell, we'll see anything that you do, because you know you always seem to show up in with great stuff. So, Robert Mason.
Well, you know, other than that, I'm going to be working on Hot Rods and motorcycles in my garage. Other than that, that's where you can find me.
Well, you know what? We'll show up and help you with that too. What the hell?
Yeah, you can teach us.
come down to Cave Creek, Arizona. It's nice and warm today.
Well, that sounds awesome. We're on our way. All right, Robert Mason, thank you so much.
Great talking to you guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it too, and hope everybody buys the album, and we look forward to seeing you sometime.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that as well. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks to both of you guys. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yeah, for sure. Sounds good. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.